Thank you so much for being on today's call. We wanted to give everyone an update on coronavirus and the Sjogren's Foundation and what the Sjogren's Foundation is doing to represent Sjogren's patients in the United States with the situation. We are, first, for those that don't know me, I'm Stephen Taylor, and I'm the president and CEO of the Sjogren's Foundation. And the other voice you heard already was Ben Baslow. He's our vice president of philanthropy and operations for the Sjogren's Foundation. And we're honored, as I mentioned, to be here to give you an update. Today's call, I'm going to go through an update on what we've done already regarding the coronavirus for our patients, what we're planning on doing in the future, and then also take some questions, which some of you have submitted. I'm going to go through the questions that were submitted. If we have some time, we might open up a few phone lines for questions. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the future of the foundation, just long-term, since you've taken time for today's call. We want to give you some updates on what we're doing for the disease as a whole in regards to clinical trials, clinical practice guidelines, et cetera. But that'll be a small portion of the call at the end. I do want to thank you all for your continued support of the foundation, either through your membership or your donations. Of course, at this critical time, it's important. The support that you've given us in the past has helped us be ready for this situation, and we truly appreciate that as well. I do want to jump in a little bit and talk to everyone about our new vision that we established last year, which was to create a community where patients, healthcare professionals, and researchers come together to conquer the complexities of Sjogren's. We knew Sjogren's was complex. We know we were trying to conquer the disease on behalf of all of our patients. But of course, this past month has surely thrown in additional complexities for all of us have to deal with in our regular life, especially those that suffer from an autoimmune disease like Sjogren's. Unfortunately, as you all know, we don't have all the answers yet. There's going to be a long time in research and discovery to find all the answers, but we're going to share a little bit about what we do know about Sjogren's and COVID, but more importantly, what we're doing to advocate on your behalf. Many of you know my background. I've been with the foundation for 17 years. My mom is a Sjogren's patient. And I stepped into this organization to help change it, to find more research, to investigate more drugs for the development of therapeutics for all of you. But also, I'm not a medical professional. Although I've been here a long time, I know a lot about Sjogren's. I've heard a lot of lectures on the disease. I surely am not the end-all, be-all of medical information, but I will share what I've learned over the last few weeks working with our medical professionals the best that I can. But of course, I always defer you back to your healthcare professional. So let me jump in first with what we've been doing on the coronavirus response since early March. So as you all know, back on March 9th, we canceled the National Patient Conference. We had to make that tough decision to not hold it, which would have been tomorrow and Saturday in Phoenix, Arizona. Obviously, it was a good call. We knew the data was not looking good way back then, and that's why we made our call early to take care of our patients. Thus, since then, we have been able to reschedule the National Patient Conference call for June 26th and 27th in Phoenix for those that want to still attend it. We, of course, will be making adjustments as we get into June, depending on where we are with the coronavirus. But as of right now, we will still hopefully be able to hold it at the end of June. So then after that, on March 11th, the Sjogren's Foundation put out a statement for precautions with coronavirus and with Sjogren's. This included reminding everyone about the risk at-risk populations, which are those over 60, those with multiple chronic illnesses, those that are immunosuppressed. And I want to talk a little about immunosuppressed and what that means. And we also put in the document precautionary steps you all should be taking, which you've all heard a million times, social distancing, washing your hands, et cetera. I do remind people always to wash your hands before using your eye drops and your mouth products. You often see people seem to forget that they just grab their eye drops, but you always want to make sure that you're washing hands right before you use those products as well. In regards to our statement written by Dr. Don Thomas and Dr. Nancy Carteron, Sjogren's patients aren't necessarily immunosuppressed. They are immunosuppressed if they're on an immunosuppressant, like a methotrexate or a CellCept, or there's a number of other drugs that are considered immunosuppressants. You are not immunosuppressed with just having Sjogren's, although I remind you, you do have a chronic illness, which does possibly put you in a risk pool, but is not suppressing your immune system per se, unless you're on immunosuppressant. Plaquenil has come up, which is also known as hydroxychloroquine, that is not considered immunosuppressant. It's an immunomodulator that changes how your disease is being affected in your body, but it does not formally suppress your immune system. So I just want to make that clarification because that was very important to Dr. Carteron and Dr. Thomas, that Plaquenil and hydroxychloroquine are not immunosuppressants. Thus, if you're on that drug, it does not mean your system is suppressed, your immune system suppressed. If you're on those other drugs in the other category, the methotrexate, the CellCept, et cetera, you would be on an immunosuppressant. This, again, does not mean that you might not be more at risk because you do have a chronic illness, but it does lower your chance if you're not on immunosuppressant. Again, you're probably still in a higher risk pool just because you have a chronic illness. I do want to mention that we've had a lot of questions around that, and we just wanted to make sure people understood the difference between immunosuppressants and Plaquenil hydroxychloroquine. So on March 11th, we came out with that statement. March 17th, I put a video out online reminding everyone about the potential for hydroxychloroquine shortage. I had heard there was research being done in France on the product, thanks to Dr. Carrie Neal out of Orlando, who brought it to my attention. And we wanted to make sure patients were paying attention to that even before anything was mentioned nationally around that drug. We also want to make sure you got your refills on your hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil, as well as all the other medications you might take and over-the-counter products to make sure you had them in your home in case we ended up on a stay-at-home release like we are currently, many of us in many states. We also want to remind you about being safe, reminding you about, the immunosuppressants that you might be taking. In addition, Sjogren's patients do have a higher challenge sometimes of lung complications, and so that's very important that we are watching your susceptibility to coronavirus. But then, of course, we know it attacks people's lungs and respiratory system. And again, that is a risk factor with Sjogren's, that lung complications can occur as well, just having Sjogren's. So again, there's not a lot of research. We don't know exactly the answers, but we do know we want Sjogren's patients to be careful. So that was our statement on March 17th. March 20th, I put out another update via a written update. We announced more information about the hydroxychloroquine shortage because we knew that was a challenge. The president had announced it at one of the White House Coronavirus Task Force meetings, which was a little premature in regards to putting the FDA in a tailspin regarding the drug. And then, of course, which precipitated a shortage and then a hoarding of Plaquenil, not by our patient population, but by by others that were prescribing the medication. I'll talk about that in a little while. We also announced at the time we'd be doing patient town hall meetings, as well as we were going to be advocating regarding the shortage, as I just talked about. Since the March 20th statement, this is where we stand on some of the things that we're doing on behalf of the patient population. First, last week we wrote a letter to the FDA and the White House Corona Task Force, urging them to consider the shortage of hydroxychloroquine and or Plaquenil as dangerous and a very important drug that Sjogren's patients need to survive some of them. As well as we know that patients that go off hydroxychloroquine sometimes have a major setback. Their disease becomes exacerbated, and then when they go back on hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil later, it's sometimes hard to get back to the level they were at on their first round when they were on it originally. So stopping and starting hydroxychloroquine is not suggested by many of our healthcare professionals, and it's not really a safe thing to do. So having a shortage is definitely a challenge. We know that some healthcare plans don't believe that, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. We've definitely had some challenges since then with health plans not understanding hydroxychloroquine and Sjogren's and what it does. We did hear back from the FDA. I just want to mention almost within 15 minutes. The Sjogren's Foundation has a great relationship with the FDA and the senior leadership there because we are working so closely with them in clinical trials to develop a therapeutic for Sjogren's. And so I was very proud to hear back right away. And I want to thank Dr. Janet Woodcock, who is at the FDA, who we sent the letter to. She's also happens to be a rheumatologist, but now she oversees the various clinical trial divisions of FDA. So she surely appreciates and understands Sjogren's and the complications. She also understands the drug hydroxychloroquine very well. And she and others at the FDA has assured us that they are working with the drug manufacturers to relieve this shortage in the upcoming weeks, sometime in April, because they are working at trying to get them to ramp up more production of hydroxychloroquine. They just weren't ready for it to be such an issue so quickly. And so we are happy to hear from the FDA and that they knew about the situation. And I feel very confident in the FDA that Janet Woodcock is working on this. She is a pretty remarkable woman and rheumatologist. And if she is fighting for us, I'm very happy we have someone inside the FDA like her. In addition, I did reach out to the CEO of Pharma. Pharma is the trade association for pharmaceutical companies. It stands for Pharmaceutical Researchers and Manufacturers Association. I know him personally from my work at the National Health Council, where I volunteer on behalf of the foundation. And he and his team put together an immediate plan for me to reach out to the manufacturers of hydroxychloroquine and Plaquenil. Some make Plaquenil. Hydroxychloroquine is the generic brand for Plaquenil, which is the name brand. So they reached out to the makers of both products. They immediately heard back from some that they were working to try to ramp up production. I did get a personal email back from the president of the United States Division of Novartis Pharmaceuticals, Victor, who I met a few months ago at an event for advocacy organizations. He wrote back to me this week and said that they have are donating 130 million doses to the COVID situation so as to alleviate some of the pressure on the current pipeline where we're seeing shortages for Sjogren's, lupus, and rheumatoid arthritis where hydroxychloroquine is prescribed for. So I was thrilled to hear that they understood there was a shortage out there and they were trying to overcome that with ramping up production as well as trying to take care of the COVID situation on another plane. We've not heard back from the White House Corona Task Force. However, we do know that the letter was received by them. And then just yesterday, we announced that we are working with the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, and ARDA, which is the Autoimmune Disease Research Association, on a conference call, a webinar tomorrow at 2 p.m. I encourage you to join. There's actually already 4,000 people that are going to be taking part in that webinar tomorrow. And that is going to be with a staff member from the CDC, Dr. Georgina Peacock, who is overseeing part of their coronavirus task force within the CDC. She is going to be joined by a gastroenterologist, Dr. Cherabadi, who is at Johns Hopkins. And then the rheumatologist on the call will be Dr. Nancy Carteron, who happens to be our former medical board chair here at the Sjogren's Foundation. She's speaking actually at our national conference, and she was going to be this weekend. She'll be speaking in June. Nancy's a great friend of our foundation. We are thrilled that they chose her to be the rheumatologist when we nominated her to be the rheumatologist on the call. So tomorrow, that call will be happening at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, the CDC will be talking about the risk factors with autoimmune diseases and what they're looking at around that. If you don't have information, it is on our Facebook page about how to join that call. You have to sign up in advance. And also if you need to, you can contact the Sjogren's Foundation for more information and they can get you the email with information, but it is on our Facebook page to sign up for that call. We're thrilled to have the CDC actually going on the record in general around autoimmune diseases. So that'll be tomorrow, like I said, at 2 o'clock. Our next step was this just yet 2 days ago, the Sjogren's Foundation was asked to sign a letter with the American College of Rheumatology, as well as the Lupus Foundation and Arthritis Foundation that went to all the governors in the United States, the insurance, health insurance boards, as well as the pharmacy association boards in all 50 states. This was important because we needed them all to pay attention to a few factors. One is obviously the shortage, but why the shortage is happening. And we want to make sure that they understood the shortage is not happening from patients like you all running out to refill your prescriptions. It is not happening because you're trying to get 90-day supplies. The majority of the shortages are happening because either they've been taken from them to use for COVID and or, which is the bigger, this is the second biggest challenge, which is more important than the COVID challenge, is physicians have been writing prescriptions for family, friends, and close patients to in case they may need it for COVID down the road. So we've seen an influx of new prescriptions written for hydroxychloroquine and or Plaquenil from new patients who do not have autoimmune diseases, that need this product, but just so they can have it in case it does prove to be fruitful in the treatment of COVID. And also doctors' offices have been getting extra supplies in their office for it as well, way before we know if it works. Now, there is some positive news in it working, and there's been some negative news in it working. We are we're still a little ways from knowing if it's going to work in COVID treatment, but and so it surely was a rush to go out and get these supplies by these different people, and thus causing the shortage for our population. Nothing to do with our patients getting out there and getting their prescriptions. In addition, in the act passed by Congress a few weeks ago and then signed by the president, there was the new ruling where you could refill your prescriptions 2 weeks earlier than just waiting till the last couple days of your prescription. So I encourage you to take part in that if you haven't already. They don't want anyone to go without 2 weeks of supply on any medication. And thus, people were surely looking like they were getting prescriptions early, but that's because the act was passed by Congress, and we're thrilled that people are able to get a longer time with their products. We don't want people to be down to 1 or 2 days left with a product if possible. And then finally, I want to mention two things. One is the Kentucky Pharmacy Pharmacy Board for the state of Kentucky, and this is why the letter went to all 50 states and the pharmacy boards. The pharmacy board in Kentucky did pass a ruling that no new prescriptions for Plaquenil or hydroxychloroquine would be given for more than 10 days of supply. This is not against autoimmune disease patients. This is against those prescriptions being written for people who are trying to get the medication in case it becomes fruitful that it works in COVID. And so they're being written prescriptions for it when they don't need it. As you all know, many of you know this very well about the two products. They aren't easy to prescribe. They're not safe to take without close review by physicians. And so we're actually kind of surprised to hear doctors are writing it have for their friends and family. And so Kentucky doing that helped with the shortage in Kentucky as well, because they're not letting people get more than 10 days. They have overridden that in a few cases for lupus patients, I've heard, because the rheumatologist personally helped make sure that they could get a 30-day supply in that case. But all other new prescriptions were being written for 10 days, and I think it was the right move and something the other states should start to look at. In addition, Kaiser Permanente in California, some of you have heard this on social media, some of you have heard this on the news, both nationally and then throughout the state of California news has been covering Kaiser. They sent out a letter to patients that were on hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil, telling them that they were sorry that they would not be able to refill their prescriptions for them. They understood that the anxiety it would cause, and they also understood the disease flares it would cause by them not having the medication. And then they ended the letter that they thanked them for their sacrifice. This was beyond appalling to the foundation, to say the least, extremely disturbing to me and our staff and our board. We did reach out to Kaiser. We've also done many outreach in the state of California to make sure people understood that exacerbation of the disease isn't a flare. A flare is, I think, becoming too common of a word people use in so many different situations. Our disease isn't just a minor flare when you're not on your medication. It can cause havoc. Can be life-threatening in some situations and can really disrupt a productive life. In addition, to have a physician sign a letter thanking them for their sacrifice was extremely disheartening. So we and others have been reaching out to Kaiser. I also did bring it to the attention of the American College of Rheumatology, who is doing outreach to Kaiser as well. So we are staying on top of that. We did hear there's another plan that are doing similar things. And a few of you sent questions in regarding some shortage things you've heard or people telling you couldn't get the medications because your health insurance plan was denying them. I encourage you to let me know at the foundation if you hear those stories of plans actually stating that in written form about that they are short. That they're not refilling prescriptions. That's pretty important for us to know about so we can reach out to them. Now, if the FDA is right, we'll see an increase in supply soon. And hopefully most of you won't have run out of medications by then and we'll be okay. But I encourage you to talk to your pharmacist, even if they can give you a 10-day supply or a 2-day supply if you're that short, is to talk to the pharmacist. They have been working so hard. The pharmacists are such a first line of defense for many of us that we thank them for their hard work, but build a relationship with them and see what they can do for you as well. I do want to mention, in addition to obviously all that outreach, is, and I will say the one thing that's been remarkable is myself, and two other staff have been taking the lead on this, but we do not have an advocacy director at the Sjogren's Foundation. It was a goal for this year to raise more money to hire an advocacy director. And so we've been taking the lead on this, myself being the full lead. And it's definitely, I think we're making some progress in getting Sjogren's out there and making sure people are paying attention to our disease. Because as you all know, sometimes we say we're the most uncommon, unheard of disease. We're the most common, unheard of disease. And it's definitely important that people know that we're out there. I do want to quickly mention, because I know one person asked this question, they will not mention Sjogren's on the national news or on local news typically around hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil because we are not indicated for the treatment. We are an off-label use of that product. So when they say, they typically say it's a malaria, anti-malarial drug, but sometimes they'll say that treats arthritis or sometimes they'll say lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. That's because those diseases both got many years ago got indication to be used for their diseases. Ours is an off-label use, although 43% of our patients actually use the product. That's 43% of our patients use the product. And so it is very common among our population and has been used in Sjogren's for 30 plus years, which we reminded everyone in our FDA letter too, as well as to the health insurance plans so that they don't fall back on that. It's not indicated for our disease. So there's definitely a standard of care already developed in our disease, a standard of care that is used and a first line of care, which is used hydroxychloroquine. So in addition, I just want to mention some of the other things foundation specifically we've done. I already mentioned the National Patient Conference being canceled and moved to the end of June. We have also canceled all of our support group meetings until May 15th. So there won't be any support group meetings until mid-May or after mid-May, and we'll reevaluate that come later April. All special events have been canceled until May 15th at this point. Our first event that we've not canceled is May 16th in the DC area, but we will be making a decision in a few weeks on that. We just had to move every other event, and we're going to wait a few weeks and then see about that. But there's a high likelihood we might have to move that as well. But we were taking each event day by day and then trying to figure out new venues or new locations or full cancellations. As you can imagine, it's quite the load for the staff to do all of that. So right now we've canceled everything to May 15th. In addition, we did decide to host these 5 town hall meetings. Today is on COVID and the foundation. Next week we have meditation and mindset, as well as spirituality and stress relief. We also have telehealth. And we have coping mechanisms during this time. If you haven't signed up already for some of those, you can go back to the email that we sent out and sign up for additional conference calls. We're asking everyone to only pick 3 since they are unlimited in number. But today, on today's call, I think we have over 200 and something people taking part in today's call just now with me. We've had a great success, if you'll call it, of people wanting to take these calls. And we really felt doing wellness calls at this time, rather than talking about your disease, was important. I know all of us being stuck at home with or without children, with our spouses and significant others, as well as not being able to go out on our daily routines can get stressful. And we wanted to bring you some new different ways to look at that and cope with that. We will be looking at additional town hall meetings for later April as well as early May to continue to bring you education and support throughout the time. And then just real quickly, before I open it up for questions and I have some of the questions online I'm going to answer first, as if that wasn't enough for April, and later I'm going to talk a little bit about what we're doing for clinical trials and clinical practice guidelines, but throughout the month of March, in addition to responding and closing our office and trying to telework and get our phones to transfer to people's, our secretary's home numbers, everything among that, the last month has been insane for the foundation. We've also finalized over a year's work of renaming the organization to the Sjogren's Foundation. We announced this yesterday and today. We also launched a brand new website. Sjogren's.org is still the name of the website, but we've built a brand new website, closed the old website yesterday, and launched the new one. So if you go to Sjogren's.org, you'll see our brand new, beautiful website, very interactive, welcoming, with great information, still the great resources that we've always had, as well as some more additional resources as well. And we've dropped the syndrome from our name. We are now the Sjogren's Foundation, and from all of our literature, we redesigned all of our literature. You'll see that all the links online of all the new literature and what it looks like. And we took a very hard look for the past year at all of our materials, our look, our feel, and our brand, and then design the new logo and the entire new organization with that. So that launched yesterday, and we'll continue to launch it out throughout April. You'll see it on Facebook and other mediums, because April is Sherwin's Awareness Month. So we have also changed up Sherwin's Awareness Month a little bit around COVID, because we wanted to bring in some education around COVID. So you'll see additional things in April, Sherwin's Awareness Month, that have to do with the coronavirus, as well as recognizing our patients for their strength that they give in fighting their disease each and every day. So that is the current update on what we've done recently with the foundation, and especially around the coronavirus. I'm going to go to my document that has various questions that were asked via some of your submissions, and I'll jump into a few of them. One is, I already mentioned about what we've done. I know Carol asked a question about contacting the government themselves. We will reach out if there's a grassroots need for that. However, we do encourage you, anytime that you have a challenge getting your prescriptions filled, any prescription, but especially hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil, is for you to reach out to the FDA. There is a website called Drug Shortages at FDA, and it's a long email address. You can go on our Facebook page. We have it listed a number of times there. You can call our office or Google FDA Drug Shortages email, and you'll find it. And we encourage you to send an email to the FDA saying you had a problem getting your refill for hydroxychloroquine. They need to hear where the shortages are happening, and that they're happening regularly, to make sure that they're well aware of this. I did hear from another person that reached out to the FDA, another division, and they had not heard of the shortages. I think that was the wrong person to talk to. We know that the correct people know about the shortages, but the more we flood them with emails, the more they can't ignore a shortage like we're having. Another question was, are we working on, and I'm going to talk about this in a minute, other medications instead of hydroxychloroquine to treat Sjogren's? I'm going to talk about clinical trials at the end of this call and how we're doing with the development of a therapeutic for all of Sjogren's. And there's some exciting news on that front. A question was asked about wearing masks and gloves, and I'm not a medical professional, as you know. However, we are seeing more and more evidence that masks might be required of everyone. Our doctors are telling patients it's okay to go ahead and wear masks if you can get them. They are hard to find nowadays. But anything to do to help prevent the virus from spreading to you, there's not full evidence that it works, but it couldn't hurt, especially since you're in a higher risk population having a chronic illness. In addition, the best thing you can do is social distancing, staying in and not going out and not putting yourself in particular harm's way by going to stores, grocery shopping, et cetera. Try to send other family members to do that, since you are a little bit more at higher risk. In addition, I want to mention in the letter we wrote to the governors, and Susan asked this question about the pricing of hydroxychloroquine. We definitely have seen an increase in pricing of hydroxychloroquine over the years. We are hoping that this will bring back revisit that conversation with the drug manufacturers and insurance companies after this is all over, to ensure that there's no price gouging happening currently with the shortage, but even long term, that once it becomes such a high demand product, if it does work, for example, that our patients aren't the one paying the brunt of those expenses. And so we'll be working on that as well. And then a number of you, Patty, Julia, Pat, Diane, all asked about COVID and coronavirus, and if you're on Plaquenil, does it reduce your risk? We don't know. We surely don't know if it reduces your risk. However, we are working with some researchers at the University of California, San Francisco, who started a registry for rheumatologists to track their patient population. We've notified our rheumatologists that this is up and running, so that they can track patients that were diagnosed with coronavirus that have other autoimmune diseases. So they can start to track that and see what kind of numbers are coming out and if it's what they can learn about the different autoimmune disease patients that may have contracted coronavirus. We've not heard of an influx of people getting it, nor have we heard of a lower chance of getting it either. Of course, if they're treating it with that and it works, then possibly the doctors say there could be a benefit of you being on it. But we don't really know. And as you know, research takes years to do. So the idea that we're going to exactly know a lot of this very quickly We only can push research so much. Yes, we can push it faster than it is, but we can't push it as fast as it has been portrayed a little bit. So we are trying to make sure there isn't a secret to this situation. It will take some time to try plaquenil in the COVID population before we can say yay or nay that it works. But again, as with Sjogren's, we always tell people, do what works for you. And the doctors, I feel, in the COVID situation are doing what they seem to think that works. And that's different things for different patients. And of course, if any of us were coronavirus patients and it happened to work for us, you'd want to be on plaquenil. So so doctors, I think, are doing whatever works, and they're trying to track it to see long-term ramifications of whatever treatments they've been putting their coronavirus patients on. In addition, there was some questions regarding at higher risk. There's been some argument out there, are Sjogren's patients at higher risk or not? There is not exact science that says Sjogren's patients are at higher risk specifically. However, autoimmune disease patients have been known to be at higher risk, but some of the autoimmune diseases, the majority of the patients are on immunosuppressants, which higher makes your risk higher. Some autoimmune diseases do suppress your immune system, so thus you'd be at a higher risk. But again, having a chronic illness always is going to put you at a higher risk. And with, we know the link with lung complications also could put you at a higher risk for more, maybe possibly more serious situation if you had coronavirus, but we don't know. So the answers are still out there to be found, and we're doing the best to figure that out. We have a number of doctors on the forefront in this fight. And rheumatologists, ironically, although not being used as much as we would like, are being used in some situations around the treatment using hydroxychloroquine. We're a little frustrated they haven't used more rheumatologists in this because they know the drug the best because they've been prescribing it for 30 plus years for RA, lupus, and Sjogren's. But the idea is some rheumatologists are helping in this work. And so we may know more down the road about if it's how it's working, but also if it's lowering your risk. But in addition, are Sjogren's patients more at risk? We'll have to wait and see somewhat. So I would just encourage everyone to be careful and just do all the precautionary steps you can do to keep away in regards to social distancing, as well as all the other things that the government's saying to take care of yourself, again, because you have a chronic illness. With that, I'm gonna see if Ben wants to, if anyone has a question that's on the line that wants to raise their hand, they can do *9 on your phone. It'll raise your hand, and then I will read off your phone number if I see a hand raised, and then we'll bring, or Ben will actually read off the phone number and unlock that person. So if you have a question, we'll take a couple questions before I move on to clinical trials and clinical practice guidelines. So *9 if you haven't had a question or a comment.
Steve, there's a question from 617-267-6727. So
sounds like a Boston.
Yes, hi, this is Steve Shapiro from Boston calling. Stephen and Ben, I just want you to know that I've had the CNN on television during this call, and they just had an infectious disease specialist on. I was reading the scroll at the bottom, and it's from Dr. Wilbur Chen, University of Maryland, infectious disease specialist. And the scroll said that the malaria drug may speed up COVID-19 recovery. Mm-hmm. So this was at 3:25 this afternoon. Sure. And it's Wilbur Chen, CHEN, University of Maryland. He's on the COVID-19 task force from the state of Maryland. Mm-hmm. So that may be worth checking out.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. That surely has been up and down the last few days in regards to all different people on TV talking about the pros and cons of hydroxychloroquine. So it's really all over the board still. There was a study that was done yesterday that was online that said it wasn't working and that it was being overprescribed as similar to taking it for Sudafed, like everyone should be taking it right away. And it showed that that's not necessarily helping the situation. It might help in more serious situations. There was another study that there's out of Paris that said there was some disappointing results in the use of hydroxychloroquine. So I think we're still all over the board, and we have a lot of doctors out there saying different things, and so it's going to take time. You can, as we know with Sjogren's and clinical trials, it doesn't happen overnight to get the answers, especially when a number of the patients are dying who might have been on it. So, and we don't know if they died because they were on it or not because they were on it, not because they weren't on it soon enough. And with coronavirus, that's a big challenge in a lot of the studies that we've been talking with our experts about, is the death rate of the disease is a challenge. And that could be causing some complications in study results as well. But there's definitely been some positives with it too. So it surely isn't discounted. And I think doctors are doing whatever they can for each patient. I think that's the biggest known thing we know. And if it's going to work, we hope it's going to work, you know, as fast as it can for all of us, obviously. Everyone would benefit. So Ben, do we have another question that someone started? Nine?
Yep, we do. The number is 205-590-74378.
Hello?
Hello, 205?
Area code 205. Whoever's 205, start talking. One of you will come live on the phone. Or you muted? Hello?
Yeah, they're unmuted, but I'll mute them. We can come back to it.
Okay.
This is a New Yorker, 212-831-6573.
Oh, yes, that's me. Hello?
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. This is a wonderful presentation. It's given me enormously important information for my personal health. I was recently told I should start taking the drug hydroxychloroquine. Obviously, I'm not on it, but to know all that you said is enormously helpful to me. I just wanted to mention, I did put a question in. I take pilocarpine. And I was prescribed gabapentin, and I go to a rheumatology clinic at the Hospital for Special Surgery. My clinical appointments have been canceled until further notice, and I think they may be trying to set up online conference clinic appointments, yet to see. Sure. But I was nonetheless sent from my HSS, my online account, where I can go to ask for refill prescriptions. Mm-hmm. And I was fairly alarmed by this statement was placed on all my over-the-counter medications that are listed for me as a patient. Mm-hmm. The statement is, this medication isn't available for refill through my HSS at this time. And it did include gabapentin, which the clinic prescribed to me a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And it didn't include the pilocarpine, so I was able to get a renewal. But why would they take the time to put that statement on that RX gabapentin and all of my over-the-counter, which means all my eye drops and my care?
So I don't know exactly that. I heard you read the statement. I don't know if you've called them or not, if it just means that they can't refill them there and maybe another drugstore needs to refill them for you, or you need to go to a different place to get them refilled. I'm not, because that's not your health insurance prescriber, was it? HHSS, that was the Hospital for Special Surgery, right?
Right. Well, I never did get this through them. It's, yeah. Just that it's just ascribed to me as a patient that this is the care that I need to be comfortable. And I just wondered why they would make such a statement, because to me, if it comes from them, it's sort of suggesting something more than just not available. I mean, it never was where I never got it through the hospital. I have to go to drugstores to get those items.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. I do know, though, there has been, you know, we followed up on a few things. And, you know, all of us are not, you know, perfectly technologically savvy. And sometimes they have to do workarounds in their systems. And so what happened is some of them have been thrown up statements on their websites or on their telehealth websites or on their portals that don't fit in the right place, but it's the only place they could put it. So it could have been something like that. A little alarming. I would definitely call the doctor if you're concerned about it. I wouldn't be shy. I always tell patients, you pay your health insurance premiums, you pay your Medicare premiums, whatever it is, you shouldn't be shy to call the doctor and find out and try to get an answer back from them why that statement. And so I would reach out personally to HSS yourself and or the doctor's office and see if there's a concern about gabapentin. I've not heard of shortages in any other really drug. There might be some here or there, but I haven't heard necessarily a drug shortage in gabapentin, nor have I heard a concern about that. So So I don't have many answers for you except to just call the doctor's office yourself and see what they say.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for the question, though.
We're going to try Sharon Casey.
Sharon, are you there?
Yes, thank you.
Hey.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My question is, would having multiple autoimmune diseases, which of course a whole lot of us do, does that increase your risk factors like exponentially or more or not at all? Are you pretty much the same if you just have one or if you have several and they're fairly advanced? I mean, I know the state of your health is going to make your recovery more difficult for anybody. But specifically for autoimmune diseases, having multiple diseases make things more dangerous.
I think it probably does. Any, you know, hearing and talking to the rheumatologists, we know that some autoimmune diseases are very, very life-threatening. And so, you know, being careful, everything you do is so important. And then if you have multiple ones, and even if you don't have the one that's so life-threatening, but you have others like Sjogren's and rheumatoid arthritis, et cetera, it surely could higher your risk factor. Plus, you may be on other medications, which like immunosuppressant, that would make your higher risk factor. In addition, as you mentioned, recovery when you have multiple chronic illnesses could be a challenge as well. You know, there's not a lot of studies on who's more susceptible to get it, as believe it or not, as there is in regards to where it's causing the most havoc. We know there's been a lot of research shown that people with heart disease, you know, a major heart disease, as well as lung complications, asthmas, emphysemas, et cetera, are way more susceptible to be life-threatening. Although we know the stories you've seen on TV with people with coronavirus being life-threatening without some of those things, but majority of losses have come from elderly and those with those major other complications, cancer survivors, et cetera, that might have compromised some of their systems. And so so those are the challenges. So autoimmune diseases, that's more on the, not the susceptibility of getting it, but in regards to the survivalship from it, that's where that challenge is. Knowing who's going to get it, it hasn't seemed exactly clear, except they know that anyone that's immune system would be compromised would be more likely to get the disease. So, and that's why they keep pushing that if your immune system is compromised, you want to be careful. So I think with multiple diseases, you just need to be doing what everyone else is doing as well. And I would be, you know, of course, leery. I'd also make sure, you know, I didn't mention this earlier and I surely don't want to make, you know, alarm people, but in case something does happen to you, that your medication history and your disease history is written down for your spouse or significant other to take with you to the hospital in case you, you know, have to be dropped off. My grandfather went to the hospital on Monday. He does not have coronavirus, but he had to be dropped off at the front door of the hospital. My mother and my aunt could not go in with him. And so, you know, you're hoping for the best. And my grandfather, God bless him, is 90 years old, 93. But, you know, he wouldn't maybe know everything about him. And if you are unable to talk or you're so sick and you can't remember anything, you want to make sure you bring stuff with you to have a good list written down. So always being prepared for that is always important anyways. Even in this time, so that your spouse or family member have copies and then so they can talk to doctors over the phone from home about it. And then you bring a copy if you end up going to the ER ever with you as well. And I just thought of that, Sharon, because your question, you want to make sure you have that history with you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks,
and
Sharon.
Also thank you for all that you do. You're quite a blessing to us all.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Sharon. Thanks so much.
Okay, Steve, we have Laura Lehman.
Yes, hi.
Steven,
I just wanted to point, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Laura.
Okay, hi. I just wanted to point out a couple of things that I've observed as I've been a pharmacy technician for 40 years. And one of the things that people should help ease them about the use of hydroxychloroquine in malaria is it's typically given if you're going out of the country and into a zone where malaria is highly contagious or active at that time. Mm-hmm. And it's usually just a short period of time that they give it for. So it's like 10 days or 2 weeks.
Sure.
So I think that people who are getting it for the use in Corona or hopefully if it becomes, you know, the drug of choice in the future, it won't be that that person's going to be on it forever like we are.
Correct.
It's going to be a shorter span.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, might set some ease there. And the other thing is regarding masks, I personally am making masks myself. There's mm-hmm. a lot of videos out there. Some of them are better than others. But I will just tell you this, as a medical person, and if you go from being a lay person to a medical person or any somebody that is not used to wearing a mask, you're going to be very tempted to constantly be touching or adjusting the mask.
Yes.
And what you really want to do, if you're going to be wearing a mask, it's vitally important that you get it adjusted. Your hands are clean when you put it on, you get it adjusted, and then you do not touch your face after the mask is on, and that it is snug and tight around your face.
Mm-hmm.
Once you come back, then you wash your hands again before you remove it. That's really important. I did hear something that said that when you have a contagious person, if they say blow their nose, for example, and a droplet would come out, or the droplets are heavier, they fall to the ground, and they're likely not as contagious. But when somebody sneezes or kind of spits from their mouth, those are lighter, airier droplets that can float through the air and into other people more easily. And so that's why I personally think the masks are good, because you don't always know who's contagious before they are. The other thing is that I think instead of us all being so paranoid, one good thing that's going to come out of this is that we are getting a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
Sjogren's is on a lupus, Sjogren's, autoimmune in general, is getting a huge platform right now, which is going to ultimately be helpful to us in the end, because it's spreading the word about us and our illness.
Thanks, Laura, so much. No, I agree. And it's very interesting. I'm so glad you mentioned the mask thing, because that was great advice coming from your background, is people are always adjusting them. And so you want to be careful of that. So thank you so much. And I do agree with you. And thank you for reminding us of that. You know, the run on Plaquenil should have been seen, but we weren't really ready for it. That's why the FDA hadn't announced that they were looking at it as a potential treatment yet. The idea is that there was a quick run on it. So now that they've hopefully, with the FDA and pharma, getting these pharmaceutical companies to ramp up production, it should level back off, because the pill is very easy to make. A number of companies make Plaquenil brand name, which is very rare. Typically, one company makes a brand name product, but Plaquenil has been around for so long, a number of companies make it. So it should be able to be ramped up pretty quickly. And especially with the coronavirus people not being in on long time, they definitely, the ramp up will slow down. So thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm going to jump into just the last few comments, and then I'll take some questions at the end as well. I just wanted to mention real quickly before we wrap up a few things happening in the future for the foundation. I mentioned them and teased them out earlier. One is clinical trials, and one is clinical practice guidelines. As you all know, the foundation has been working a number of years on writing clinical practice guidelines. They are a roadmap for doctors to follow in the treatment of your disease. We continue to go down the road of writing guidelines. We are currently in a phase 2 cycle. We wrote 5 guidelines to start with. That included dental caries prevention, which is dental caries are tooth decay. So basically making sure that you don't have tooth decay, and what you should do to prepare for that, and what your doctor should be doing for you to prevent you from getting tooth decay. We have dry eye in Sjogren's, and then we have fatigue and the treatment of fatigue, and then the treatment of musculoskeletal pain. The fatigue guidelines do specifically say to use Plaquenil and hydroxychloroquine. So that's one of our reasons we want these guidelines out there, so we have a standard of care, so that we can argue when we have such things like this to the FDA and others that it is in the guidelines that are publicly endorsed and are out there that they use this for treatment. And so that was one of the reasons the guidelines need to be established. And no one wanted to write guidelines for our disease, so we did it ourselves. We have used the highest standards to write our guidelines. We've used the GRADE methodology and Delphi consensus panels to work on our guidelines, which is very important in order for them to be endorsed and recognized by the physicians. They need to be very strictly written, not just opinion from patients or opinion from doctors, but not only written from science and clinical experience, but then the Delphi consensus model is where we take it out to 75 doctors who were not part of writing it, and they need to vote on each recommendation within the guideline. Fatigue had 10 recommendations within it, and the doctors had to vote on them, and we had to get to majority on each one. If one failed, we had to go back and rewrite that one, justify to the doctors why, and convince them to vote for it, showing them the science behind why we wrote what we wrote, and then go back till we get consensus before we can approve that recommendation within a guideline. Currently, we're on phase two. I'm thrilled to announce that we just finished the consensus part of our pulmonary complications in children. So we'll have lung complications in children's guidelines out sometime in 2020. What's remarkable about the pulmonary guidelines is not only did we have to involve rheumatologists to write them, we needed to recruit pulmonologists to write them with us. And so that took a lot of relationship building because we don't know as many pulmonologists as we do rheumatologists. But all of these doctors have volunteered their time to write our guidelines. What's also remarkable about the pulmonary guidelines, as I mentioned, there was 10 recommendations in fatigue. There was like 6 or 8 in musculoskeletal pain. Pulmonary guidelines, we have 58 recommendations of what patients and doctors should be doing to monitor and to treat pulmonary complications in Sjogren's. And I think the most important part of the guidelines is what doctors should be doing to monitor for the complications. Many rheumatologists don't know what to do with pulmonary complications. They don't know what they should be doing to monitor for it. So our new guidelines will give them the roadmap of what they should be doing. So currently that's where pulmonary stands. We are currently working on 2 different neuropathy guidelines on peripheral neuropathy and another neuropathies. We're also going into vasculitis and lymphoma. We also will be coming out with dental decay restoration, what dentists should be doing to restore your dental decay. All of those are in an ongoing process. They take a long time to come out, but we are still marching through them as we go. And eventually we will have 16 different systemic guidelines. So those are the fatigue, musculoskeletal pain, pulmonology, vasculitis, et cetera. Then we'll have dried mouth, dental decay ones, and dry eye. So we're continuing to do that fight. And then also I want to mention our real hard work on clinical trials. As you know, back in 2010, we had no companies currently working in clinical trials. Through advocacy work, knocking on doors, not taking no for an answer from the staff, myself, as well as our medical board chairs, especially Dr. Nancy Carteron, Dr. Steve Carsons, Dr. Teresa Lawrence Ford, and of course the late Elaine Alexander. We have convinced now 11 companies to be investigating drugs for the disease. Within those 11 companies, we have 25 different compounds that we're looking at. When I say compounds, that means brand new assets that are potential targets to treat our entire disease. They aren't dry eye drugs. They're not dry mouth drugs. They are potentially treat the entire disease or a systemic portion of the disease. So we are thrilled to have these companies in trials. There's 3 companies that are very far along going into phase 3 trials this year. So please watch and listen to the foundation. Go to our website, look for clinical trial sites in your area. Later this year, you'll be seeing over the summer and the fall, you'll be seeing many, many, many new clinical trial sites open up as they enter phase 3 with these compounds. So we are getting ever closer to a drug for our entire disease, which goes back to that question I mentioned. What are we doing to replace hydroxychloroquine? These drugs could potentially replace hydroxychloroquine for many of our patients. The first ones out of the gate might be more serious drugs that are only going to be given to serious patients, but that will only be a slippery slope for them to look at them in different forms to open them up to larger populations. And if we can get a drug on the market for a Sjogren's indication, no matter what it's for, serious disease or not, it'll still be a huge change for the entire disease and awareness. And then in addition, obviously, we continue our work in patient support and education and our new website. I will tell you that it's because of all of you and your support these past few years that we've been able to do what we do, especially this time as we've been trying to respond to the COVID crisis for our patient population. We're going to need continued support going forward, not only for our current state for coronavirus to help keep the organization viable and moving forward, but also long-term for our work in trials and clinical practice guidelines, et cetera, et cetera. But the foundation is doing well. We aren't going anywhere. We're still going to be here for you. We've not laid any staff off. We may be all teleworking, but we will be there for you through thick and thin, no matter what. So with that, I will, I guess I'll take one or two more questions, Ben. If you want to hit *9, Ben will look for anyone new that did *9 to raise their hand. We can take a comment or two before we wrap up the call.
Sure, Steve, I have a few other people. Catherine Williams.
Oh, thank you. I will be fast. I just want to thank you, especially for the clinical guidelines and for the clinical trials. But I have a particular question, and thanks for the work on the plaquenil shortage. What is the process for getting FDA to approve the use of plaquenil for Sjogren's so it's not just off-label? Is it a real complicated process?
Well, yes. So the challenge with that, thank you. Great question, Catherine. The challenge with getting indicated for Sjogren's is that no one drug company owns the product. And so no one wants to spend the millions and millions of dollars to go through clinical trials for Sjogren's to prove that it works when we have 30 years of experience showing that it works. And so we don't really need an indication for it because it can be written off label without a problem. If it was a drug that had a problem getting written off label, we might fight for an indication for the disease, for the drug, but since it's easy to be written off label, it's normally approved by insurances. We really don't feel it necessary to fight for it. In addition, no company really wants to take it on. We'd have to find a private institution that might want to take it on as a project to get it approved in that way, and that's even more of a challenge. So that's the bigger challenge with the hydroxychloroquine having multiple owners of the drug. So instead, of course, we focused on new drugs because we also know that there's many patients that don't take it and their side effects to hydroxychloroquine that are dangerous. And some people don't know if it exactly works as well as it should. So we've moved into focusing on the new compounds and assets.
Thank you very much.
But the great question, very insightful. Thanks, Catherine. I'm glad I got to explain that.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're muted, Ben, if you're bringing somebody in.
Thank you, Steve. I don't have a name for this one. It is 973-827-1862.
Yes, hi, my name is Sue. I actually had a question in regard to the conference call that you referenced for tomorrow with the CDC.
Yeah.
There are, believe it or not, actually some of us who don't have access to Facebook or prefer not to use it.
Yes.
So I was wondering if it might be possible for you to either provide the information as to how to become a participant in that call tomorrow or send an email to all members that might be interested.
Yes. So we didn't, it came out so late, we didn't do a email out to everyone because we also didn't want to flood boxes because we've been sending various updates and things. And so that's why we didn't do a mass email on it. I'm trying to see if there, I got the email in front of me, how, yeah, it doesn't really say how to go. But you know what we'll do is we will put it on our website on Sjogren's.org as a headline. So,
okay, that sounds great.
Ben will get that up today as a headline so that you can register for tomorrow's CDC meeting. And then so on our very opening of our new website, Sjogren's.org, just scroll down a little bit. There'll be two round circles. Those will be the most recent headlines. By in another half an hour or so, a new headline will be up that says CDC webinar. And then you can click on that and then click through that link. Great. Thanks for bringing that up, Sue. And
okay. Thank you very much.
Good work around. Yep.
excuse me. We got a couple more, as many as that you
yeah, we'll are. Take one or two more.
This is Sherry Kafton.
Oh, hey, Sherry.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
We're fine. Thanks. Thank you again for doing this and just for all the years of your dedication and compassion to our disease. Because, again, I forget the your one-liner of the most common unknown disease.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many people have no clue what this is, but my question is, I know that some of us Sjogren's patients prefer the name brand Plaquenil versus the hydroxychloroquine. Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, I always try to get the name brand one. But when I kind of heard the glimmer that they were going to try this for COVID-19, I did switch to mail order, because when I was doing my retail pharmacy, I was able to ask them, because I guess at one point, it was kind of the same. One company bought out the other company, although you mentioned about how several companies actually produce Plaquenil hydroxychloroquine, but I was always able to, they kind of put it in my profile that I just want the actual Plaquenil. But when I switched to mail order, because I got scared that I wasn't going to be able to get it because of the COVID-19 trial, they gave me hydroxychloroquine. And I'm just kind of curious, have you heard anything? Because it sounds like they're only doing the hydroxy. Do you know if there's a shortage of the Plaquenil name brand?
No, there's a shortage overall for everything. Novartis, the mention of the president of Novartis, they make the actual name brand Plaquenil. So they are the ones donating $130 million to help open up their supply chain for where they were supplying for autoimmune disease patients to be okay. So the reason that typically, no matter which company you got Plaquenil from versus hydroxychloroquine, and I'll just, for a quick education for everybody, generic brand, when a product comes on the market, a name brand, it has a certain formula, everything from what the active ingredients are to the inactive ingredients. So in order to be a name brand product, you have that formula. When it goes generic, the company does not have to release what their inactive ingredients are in the product. And thus, that's filler, if you will. They have to fill the pill with other stuff. So generic brands put in other fillers. They make the best guesstimate of what they think is a filler in there. It's not active, so it's not going to hurt you, but they put different fillers in, and some generic companies are known for certain inactive ingredients they use regularly. And thus, sometimes a generic brand won't work as well as the name brand because that inactive ingredient doesn't settle well with you or other medications you're on. There's no risk to it, but sometimes it just doesn't work the same way. There have been some generics pulled from the market because their inactive ingredients made the drug not as powerful or useful, and they've had to rechange in active ingredients. So what happens is, for the physicians and or pharmacy people on the call, I'm probably dumbing down the system a little bit, but that's pretty much how it is. With Plaquenil, because it's called Plaquenil, they all have to follow the same formula. So probably in the past, if you've gotten a Novartis or a Sanofi Plaquenil, you would have got the same exact product because the recipe is exactly the same. But when you go into the generic, the inactive ingredients could change it. So that's why you might have never seen a difference depending on who gave you which name brand, which company made it. And then in addition, but we've not seen a difference between where we're getting shortages from. We're seeing shortages across name brand and generic equally in the system right now. Again, we're hoping by April it'll be picked up.
Okay. Oh, thank you for explaining all that. I really appreciate it. I think what I'll do is I'm just happy just to have something. Right. So obviously I'm not going to turn away my 90 days of hydroxy, but maybe after all this craziness dies down a little bit, maybe I can go back to the name brand even by mail order.
Exactly. Exactly. Hopefully you'll be able to. That's right. Sherry, thanks so much. And be well out in California.
Thank you. No, you stay healthy. And again, thank you for all that you do for us.
Thanks.
And stay well. And I hope your mom's doing well.
She is. She's on the phone now. She heard you, so I'm sure. So thanks so
much.
Oh,
great. Sending you hugs. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks. Okay, one more question, Ben, and then we can wrap up.
Okay, and then the other questions, if we didn't get to you, feel free to email me at my email address, or you can also submit through the form, and I'll make sure that Steve sees those. If there's a general follow-up that we can include them in, we will. I'll also try and follow up with everyone as well.
And Ben, before you go to I don't know if you on your, go ahead. Go with the last question.
Okay. Eileen McCarthy, can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Eileen.
Good. Thank you. A few calls back, I was glad to hear you mention that there are a lot of people who have a lot of issues with Plaquenil, mm-hmm. and have some bad reactions.
Yes.
And I have known, I'm not on it, but that's what is my next step. While we've been doing years of testing, it seems like, to get to the bottom of a lot of different things that I'm dealing with. But I have a fear of Plaquenil because of the things that I've heard and people that I've known with the issues, including my mom. And you seem to suggest that there are some other things that they're looking at or other possible medications that might work instead of the Plaquenil, either in the works or currently available. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, definitely there's side effects to hydroxychloroquine and or Plaquenil. There's obviously the, you know, toxicity with the drug. Some people doesn't settle well with, and other people don't feel it's working well for them. So different things happen on that drug specifically. And that's why the rheumatologists that know they're trying to look at it COVID. Now, as the pharmacy tech mentioned earlier, is Laura, I think her name was, Laura mentioned, you know, that it doesn't look like the COVID people will be on it long-term. So their risk factors would be a lot lower of toxicity and et cetera from the drug. Our patients are on it for years and years. So obviously retinal toxicity, which is eye issues, blindness, is the severe risk factor of it.
That's my fear.
Yeah, and so that is a challenge for patients. Very rare. Although I do can tell you also, I know people by name who ended up with eye issues because of their Plaquenil, but it is still very rare in all the numbers of people I know that are on it. So people are concerned. The drugs I'm talking about in clinical trials are, you know, things that we've started talking to the companies about. They'd be brand new drugs that would treat the whole disease. They'd be biologics that would treat the systemic portion of the disease. They'd be more specific. They'd only be specific to Sjogren's. It wouldn't be like a hydroxychloroquine that's lupus, RA, and everything. And so that's why we're working with the drug companies to investigate and find a new drug that will be able to treat all of the disease.
Okay.
And so the clinical trials are looking for people who are interested in going into the clinical trial. You can go to our website, and we have a clinical trial section. As we start to recruit for more and more clinical trials, we've been doing it for the last couple of years now. You'll see sites come up on our site. When they fill with patients, they'll go off our site. So the only active ones that are currently actively recruiting will remain on our site. You'll see an influx in the summer and fall with new sites. We have two different companies that have 30 plus sites going active this year to recruit for their drug. And so we hope that you'll all take a look at that and consider going into a clinical trial, but also watch our newsletter as we come out with more information about what's happening down the road.
Okay, thank you. And real quickly, if I could squeeze it in, The problems with the eye issues with the Plaquenil, would that be macular degeneration specifically or other issues with the macula?
No, it's a retinal toxicity, which means a blindness challenge. So you'd start to have blurry issues or blind spots. Anytime you're on the drug, if you have any eye issues, you need to bring attention to your doctor right away, not just your rheumatologist, but your eye doctor. And that means if you're on hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil and you have those symptoms, don't wait to your next appointment. Immediately call your eye doctor and get in there for a test, which will probably be faster than getting into your rheumatologist. But call your rheumatologist and tell them you're having eye issues on hydroxychloroquine. Now, this can be after being on it for years. This isn't just immediate. This is after years and years of maybe being on it. You want to make sure if anyone has those issues, they get talk to their rheumatologist right away and get into an eye doctor for an exam, because you need to come off the drug right away because it takes weeks to come out of your system. Just like the drug takes weeks to start working in your system, it takes weeks to come off of it. And so you want to come off it right away if they feel like that's what might be causing your blurriness or your blind spots, because you want to get out of your system as fast as you can, sort of stop any long-term damage. And so those are the biggest, that's a big risk factor. There's some other heart issue complications, which your doctor watches you for. Some Sjogren's patients who have heart disease don't get put on hydroxychloroquine for that reason. But overall, the toxicity is the biggest concern. And that's why we tell patients you want regular eye care checkups throughout the time anyways for Sjogren's, but especially if you're on a Plaquenil or hydroxychloroquine.
Okay. And what kind of time frame do you think we might see something different?
Well, it's going to be a while. I mean, we're still a couple of years away, but, you know, 10 years ago, we didn't have any drug company interested. So we're getting closer and closer to a product on the market that could be huge for us. So.
Okay. Yep. All right. I appreciate the information. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's great. Thanks, Eileen. So with that, that does conclude our call. I really appreciate everyone's time. And staying on extra, I hope those that had to go probably went, but I appreciate those that stuck with me for a few extra minutes. We appreciate you all at the foundation. We're only a phone call away. We may be a little hard answering all the phones these days because we're forwarding them to personal homes of our support staff, but you can always email us. And I hope that you take time to go see our brand new website, sjogrens.org, and continue to support us throughout this year. We truly appreciate it. So with that, thank you to Ben Baslow for handling all the technology today for me. And we'll talk to you guys all soon. Thanks so much. Bye.